Hello, my name is Steve Sasson. I'm Regional Director for Data Center Hawk for Latin America. And we're here today with Ricardo Aladio, CEO of Audata. Welcome, Ricardo.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here, Steve.
No, thank you for being with us. It's it's a pleasure to have you in our Hawk Talk podcast here with us today. And just for our viewers that may not know who Data Center Hawk is, you know, we provide data center operators, users, vendors, and funds with the best market intelligence possible for them to make the best investment decisions in the region. So that's what we do. We've been working in Latin America for about 3 years now, and we've been around as a company for about 10 years. So Ricardo, Audata was founded in 2015, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So I remember well, because at the time I was at Equinix, and Equinix had just entered the market. And I remember that some of the hyperscaler companies approached Equinix, and they said, you know, they wanted some hyperscale facilities and so forth. And I remember very clearly that Equinix said they didn't want this business at the time. which I was very surprised, but I think they might have regretted that now. But at the time, they decided they didn't want to go. They wanted to stay more in the retail side. So, so it'd be great to hear a little bit about yourself. You know, I know you've been at Audata since the beginning, and your background, and also as well as how have the last 2015? So the last 9 years been at Audata? I know that. Patria was the one that funded you guys to start, and then you went through a sales process, and now you're part of a great company called Align. So it'd be great to hear a little bit about that from you, in the next few minutes, if you could tell us.
Sure, it'd be a pleasure. So my background is on the investment side. So I've been in private equity and venture capital for the majority of my career, and I'm Brazilian. So been doing these investments. I was doing venture capital investments when people in Brazil didn't even know what the word meant. Right? We call ourselves there's a few of us that, we get together, every other year, and we say, oh, we're the dinosaurs of the internet because we're looking for deals in 99, 2000 and things like that. Right. So I started private equity on the telecommunication space. And then in 99, I actually, moved to venture capital. And I did that for almost 22 years in different, funds and all that. And it's always focused on more, emerging deals in emerging countries, right? So we would normally look at what's working in the US and Europe and see it happening in Brazil 4 or 5 years ahead, right? And then invest in, smart, entrepreneurs and sort of ride it out until that thing matured. So that was the playbook. In that capacity, I worked for Intel Capital, which is at the time was one of the largest corporate venture funds in the world. And they were entering they were moving from personal computers to servers. And data center was important for them because they saw that as an important entry point for their new products. This is 2004. So one of the groups that I was part of that linked to the US was doing data center deals. And I started looking for opportunities in Latin America. So I visited for period from 2004 to 2012, I think. I visited every single building. I participated in every transaction that happened. There weren't many, but I were in all of them, in some form or factor, partner with somebody if it was a control, because we only did minority, trying to put, consortiums together to buy companies. I almost bought Divio 3 times. So that's how, how I started cutting my teeth in the data center world, in parallel to all the other, security and of cloud and all sorts of other investments I was doing. But the truth was, I never actually did a deal in data center. I liked the space, but I didn't do a deal. Fast forward to 2014, the world was changing. And when we looked at Brazil from a perspective of cloud adoption, we saw that, that was coming, where Amazon was already here. But you looked at the infrastructure and it was really not there, right? It was no man's land. Nobody was thinking how all this cloud was going to be available in Brazil if you don't have, you know, the basic infrastructure, except for Accenture. So Accenture saw that. So they were starting to build the company, starting to grow very shortly. And Equinix had a fantastic business. They had bought Alloggy, which is a deal I also was, you know, at some point I looked at, and they had a good customer base, and so did UOL at the time. So that business was going, but the hyperscale business was not. And my team was doing some of these deals. So they were in Switch at the time, and that deal went really well for them. And they had a few deals in Asia and all that. So it was going. So I could see from internally from Intel that, you know, there is this business that's more wholesale. We call it wholesale at the time, right? So yeah. Wholesale that you sell to 1, 2, 3 customers. And it's a little bit different than, you know, selling connectivity, you know, cloud exchanges and things like that. So with that, folks at Patria called me and said, we're looking at this space. What do you think? I said, well, I love the space. So, you know, we dated for like 6 months until a point they actually, you know, put a ring in my finger and said, come over to Patria, leave Intel, come over to Patria. We don't have a deal yet. So you have to put together a business plan, take it to investment committee. And if approved, you got to cash, you go build a company from scratch. So it was a greenfield. They actually asked, what do you want to buy? I said, well, what I want to buy is not available. It's not for sale. And what is for sale, I don't want to buy specifically. And they said, well, you know, that's a great answer. I love that. We love building companies from scratch. So we did it successfully in the past. Different approach for private equity, for sure. And he said, so come on board. And so I did. And with my co-founder, Rafael, which was already at Patria, we did exactly that. For 3 months, we put together a presentation. We took it to investment committee. Investment committee was really excited about the opportunity. And that PowerPoint and Excel spreadsheet, we got out of that meeting with a $250 million check to go build the company, which really helped at the time, right?
So, and then aligned, right? So,
well, no, then 9 years of building the company, right? So two investment person knew nothing about building data centers. So we had to get, you know, the third leg, and we hired somebody from the market that really knew how to build data centers. And it was a slog. It was really difficult. Brazil was going through various crisis, and we had, you know, multiple, you know, governments, impeachments and things like that. And it really took us almost 3 years to really land a customer. Once we did that, then it really accelerated. We started moving out of Brazil. We started Colombia, and then the pandemic hit, and that's when really things went crazy, right? Because we were in the right place at the right time. The cloud was growing really fast. So we, besides Brazil and Colombia, we opened Mexico and Chile at the same time. And those countries have been growing really fast. So yeah, that's the 9 years of Odata. We finally got to a size where this is a very high intensive capital requirement business. And Patria was getting to a point where it had exhausted its investment capacity. And we had to continue growing, so it made all the sense that they sold the business. It was a long, long process. It took us a year, a lot of interest from many players, and the winner was aligned, which worked out really well. And now we're gonna complete 1 year since the actual. The closing of the acquisition, which was May 19th, was actually the same date that Odata was founded. That same investment committee meeting 2015 was May 19th. Wow. Yeah, so we call that Odata's, you know, birth date. So, and we actually closed the transaction with Align at that same date. Okay. 9 years after. So it's an important date for us, May 19th.
That's great. 9 years is a long time for Patria to hold on to you guys. I mean, the funds these days trying to get out in 5 to 7 years. So that's great that they were around for so long, right?
Well, it's an infrastructure fund. So they were built for that. So they were looking at 10 to 12 years. So the fact that we were linked to infrastructure funds made the conversation a lot easier. Because if it's private equity, they wouldn't have the time to hang on. And that's why, you know, Greenfield makes sense for them, because they had more patience. It was more patient capital than your normal private equity investor.
Yeah, I've dealt with with both, and they asked me to find a data center in Colombia that was already built and operational, and I said it doesn't exist. And then we found the Zona Franca data center for Kio, and that was one. Yeah, those don't come around very often, but those are not easy to find. But just going back to your point about dinosaurs of the internet, I'll tell you a very quick story about myself. I sold Embratel STM1s or OC3s at the time, three STM1 IP circuits via satellite in 2000.
OC3s, so, you're telling our public our age, Steve.
Yes,
I'm sure that half the audience don't know what an OC3 is.
No, they don't know how many megabits is in an OC3, but yeah, it's that was a long time ago. So I feel like a dinosaur of the industry myself. So you mentioned that you've expanded into these other four countries, right? Chile, Colombia, and Mexico. They all have, you know, obviously different challenges, and we'll get into Mexico a little bit later. But has one country been a little bit easier to go into than others, or do you find every country different? You know, what?
I wouldn't say easier. The challenges are different, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, I think Brazil, being, you know, the company being Brazilian, we've been here, we hiring people from Brazil, we having our suppliers here, was always, you know, easier to manage and all that. And we had our fair share of problems, right? But definitely openly, I think we, in Colombia, we did it in very carefully, right? We started in Colombia, small, we didn't put a large building, then we built the shell, and then we built the run room and two rooms. So it was a more an organic sort of growth than really, you know, let's go full in the way we did with Mexico and Chile, right? And what we found out throughout the growth of the company is really, really that, you know, you can't do these things from 4,000 miles away. You can't. So, you know, we were managing Mexico from Brazil in the beginning, as if, you know, it was a Brazilian company, right? And I think that was a great mistake. The good news is that we did that. We shortly understood that, you know, it was unmanageable, and that we needed a very deep local team. And then from there on, that was our first challenge, right? From there on, we started building on that, right? Because the Colombia team was easy. We started building, you know, we didn't have, you know, a threshold. We didn't have a timeline. So build one building, bring customers. It was much smoother, which gave us really, really good control over Colombia. But Mexico, we had customers. We had to build data center, have to deliver power, have to do everything. And, you know, not doing that in one country, but in two countries at the same time, we definitely had our shares right in the middle of the pandemic, right? And this, you know, I hired my whole team in Mexico by Zoom, the first team, by Zoom. And I only visited Mexico, I think, 8 months into, you know, we launched that country, and maybe 5 months after we started construction, right? So we were doing all this from a distance, and it didn't go well. I tell you, we really mismanaged. We hired the wrong suppliers, completely wrong suppliers. It was a train wreck, to tell you the truth. But, you know, growth is always, you know, you have to go up and down. So that taught us a really important lesson. Unfortunately, today, I don't think anybody from that initial team, I think had like 12 or 15 people there. Nobody works at Odata anymore. But I can say with you know, that today our construction and operations team in Mexico is one of the best we have, if not the best, right? They are right now building 3 facilities, have delivered, you know, 60 days ahead of time, a massive building in Querétaro, and in, you know, and also thinking how we're going to expand that. So, you know, it's humbling to sort of go back to the drawing board, find the right people, hire the right people, understand the really the there are a lot of things in Mexico that you need to understand as a Mexican how to do it, right? And it was a lot more, it was a lot less on the surface, and these are very peculiar, you know, how you position, how you sell, how what's in the contracts and all that. So it's doing business in Mexico. Once we figure that out, it's a great country to be in. I love Mexico because it's, you know, it's an economy that is super, you know, thriving right now. It's growing, and once you got it figured, I think we have a really strong team there. So
yeah, I mean, it's interesting how you entered, you know, you entered Colombia, Mexico, and, you know, based on, you know, our data, you know, obviously Mexico is growing a lot faster than Colombia right now with a hyperscale, you know, entries there. But if, you know, and you also mentioned going, a Brazilian company going to Mexico, it's funny because I hear the same thing about companies from outside Brazil going into Brazil. They have the same issues in Brazil, right? So these cultural barriers, a lot of times, are not easy to penetrate when you're doing business in other countries.
Yeah, maybe the gap wasn't as big, right, from Anglo-Saxon to a Latin country. So, you know, I think the gap, but it surely was hard. And Chile was no different, right? Even though I think we knew Chile a lot better. So Patria was in Chile. They had investments there. I have been investing in Chile all my life, so I have done deals there. I took companies public in Chile. So, you know, it's a space where I navigated, my team here navigated a little bit better. But it's on the other side, Chile is very bureaucratic country today. So our problems there were a lot more linked to permitting and government and companies, how they operate, the speed at which is not the what we're accustomed in Brazil, Mexico, or US, right? So it takes more time to get things done in Chile, of all countries we operate. So those sort of things. So it's complete different learning from Mexico, right? And but also I think that we dug in, and again, I think we're operating really well right now. We deliver by far the largest facility in Mexico, in Chile ever built, about 6 months ago. We're expanding our first facility also to more or less the same size as that other one. So it's going well, and our customers are happy with us because some of our customers have also not only suppliers such as us, but they also, you know, start building themselves, and they know the challenges and they compare, right? How did you deliver a 40 megawatt building in 18 months, whereas it took me 2.5 years to deliver, you know, half of that, right? So that comparison, because Mexico, there was no comparison, right? Nobody was building Mexico. It was just everybody starting at the same time. But Chile people had been there, right? Yeah. When we entered, so.
Yeah, it's interesting. Each market is a little bit different. Brazil, you know, the hyperscalers just entered the market recently. You know, they went through you guys and other providers at the beginning. Now they've entered the market. Mexico, like you said, everybody went in at the same time, and we'll touch on Mexico in a second. But Chile, providers went and you know, now we saw Amazon, took a while for them to get their permits there. Google just had their permit removed, you know, revoked, and then they changed a few things, so it's probably going to move forward. But I think the hyperscalers get a sense of appreciation and when they go in themselves and they run into problems, right?
That is
correct.
But
speaking of Mexico and Querétaro, I mean, you guys have done a tremendous job getting your second facility up there and getting power. I mean, I can tell you from the people I've spoken to and from my numbers, I just finished calculating the Q1 number absorption in Querétaro and almost come to a complete stop.
Really?
Today, yes, Querétaro today, you were getting 80 megawatts of absorption every quarter. I think they had 3.5 megawatts of absorption last quarter, which is sad, you know, because and from what people are telling me is, you know, nothing's going to happen now because of the elections, and they're going to figure out who's going to be elected. But you guys did a tremendous job getting that power delivered to that second facility. So congratulations with that.
No, but the real story is the third facility, right? It's where I think that we really took a different approach. But yeah, I think it goes to a lot of what I said before. When we started looking to Mexico, even though, you know, we started all at the same time, we were analyzing that business 2 years ahead, and so Chile. So when the customer said, "I need a facility here," we had done a lot of homework, right? We were in a few acquisitions in both countries. We tried to acquire a few sites. We were, you know, among the final bidders for the Axtel transaction, and then we really said, you know, this is not the type of building we will build. There's not much growth. I think we can do this organically. And it wasn't like a huge team coming over. We weren't buying like, you know, a great team. So we said, you know, just buying a facility is really not our core, you know, strength. So let's figure out where we're going to buy land, how we're going to have power, and so on and so forth. And that we spent the rest of, you know, almost a year talking to regulators and trying to understand how the process worked and, you know, what we had to file. We really chose our first site. Like, you know, we looked at a lot of sites. I think I visited more than, I don't know, I'm going to guess here, but, you know, more than 15 industrial parks,
wow.
Right? All in the Querétaro region. And at that time, nobody really knew. I mean, besides Axtel, I mean, it's like not that everybody knew that Querétaro was going to be this hub, right? We were sort of going to the hyperscale to say, this is where we want to place our site, and trying to convince them that that was the right move. And some of them were listening to us. So finally we got that deal done, and we had the site and we had the power. And then we really continued doing that because we saw that the power crunch was coming. So we secured the power for Querétaro to do way before we had any contract in that land, right? And then we had an opportunity for Querétaro 3, and then we already knew the playbook, right? And we just went all out and invested in significantly in that site, which today we have secured roughly 150 megawatts of capacity, right? So we believe, I don't know, you know, probably know more than I do, but that we're probably one of the few developers that really have significant deep capacity in Querétaro right now. And this is for delivery now. This is not delivery 2028 or 26. This is delivery, you know, 2025. So our connection is almost finished there. And we're sitting on a significant amount of capacity there, and we're building already a first building. So we believe that was the right strategic move. Of course, this does not come without having the right capital partners that have deep pockets, you know, yeah. and can really lean in on things like that. You know, power is expensive. In Querétaro, is one where you have to sort of purchase the KVA rights, and we did purchase those. So in that sense. In that sense, I think our investors saw the opportunity and believed in us, and we leaned in, and now I think we're sitting on a really interesting asset, which you know we believe will draw a lot of attention from some of our customers.
Yeah, no, I've spoken to that park where you have this third facility, and they seem to be very well organized. And I know that they're providing you guys with updates of their construction and, you know, what's going on with the power there. So I know they have the power. From what I've seen is, and I know you know this, is not every park in Querétaro is the same. Some have fiber issues, fiber access issues. Some have power, obviously power issues, the substation issues. So it's very important to find the right park in Querétaro that's going to be able to serve your needs. And I think that that park that you guys selected for Querétaro 3 is a great technology park for you guys.
Yeah, and we know so much more energy procurement than the parks that they actually see a value. Because when Odata comes in and we have our whole, you know, site selection team that talks to all the regulators, so they know by first name all the guys at CFE, at Senasi, they know the process, they know what I have to file, they know what, you know. So, you know, we really put, you know, a really expert team together. So when we sit with the park and say, hey, let me see your power plans, and we start criticizing it and say, oh, this is a risk, this is a risk. You know, they see also a partnership that we can add to their, you know, and it's a value, right? Once you sign and you have, and we're able to bring our hyperscale customers, of course, you know, it's really, you know, the first park is an example of that. I mean, we're the first there, and then two other customers came in, and basically that's just data centers. The park's all it's all data centers, right? It wasn't. The park was actually, we were like the second customer in that park. It was actually brand new, right? And once we came in and we got the fiber right and we got the power right and we had the substation built accordingly to an expansion and all that, that sort of facilitated people coming in, and they sold the whole thing, and now they're doing, you know, phase two and things like that. So I think that they see also the value that we bring, and we tend to partner with park you know, investors and developers in that way, right? Yeah. You know, having the fiber pass, oh, that's a big discussion, but we already come in saying, hey, this is how you have to build. Right. And they just take it and they go build it. So it's not an issue on the parks that we are.
That's great. Before we flip the page of expansion to AI, I want to ask you one question. Are you looking at any other markets and besides the four that you're in LATAM? I know that there was an announcement, I believe, for Lima, but I'm not sure where that is. And I'm not sure any other markets.
Yeah, I think we tend to be very cautious on the markets we enter. We got our hands completely full, and we're really deep in capacity in all the four countries we are right now. And so we're working on that. I mean, from a country perspective, Peru will be the natural fifth. We're still waiting for the growth in Colombia. In Colombia, we have fantastic, you know, asset base there, just waiting to build. So we would probably, you know, we haven't really announced Peru, but it's a market where we look with a lot of we'd like it first because there's not many players there, but also because is from the GDP perspective, is definitely a market where we will need to be in. After that, there's always Argentina, right? Argentina is a market that we have dealt with forever, and it's less about the country itself. It's a very educated country with great customer base and a really deep technology usage. However, from a pure investment standpoint, it has been challenging in the past. So we're on a wait and see. We look at other countries, but those are the ones that really catch our attention. But we don't have anything planned. We got a lot of capacity that we need to move in the four countries that we are right now.
Yeah, Argentina is an interesting one because the land right now is probably the cheapest in all LATAM, and the power is extremely cheap there too. So there's plenty of renewable resources there as well. you know, I was a little surprised when Google announced Uruguay. I mean, I knew they had to do that, but Uruguay, the power is very, very expensive. They just had a 3-year drought, you know, so there's water issues there. So I don't know. I think Argentina, you know, there is a hyperscale site there that's pretty full right now, one provider. So I think there's going to be interest in Argentina. And these people are going to start looking at Argentina for to buy land maybe and wait and see until next year, see the changes that Milei is putting
in. I agree. I think they're in the right path for changes. I'm excited that the country is moving the right direction. And I'm the biggest cheer for Argentina, right? Except for not in soccer, but in everything else.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm Argentinian, so
I did not know that. I did not know that. But you know, recently Argentinians have been getting the best of us in soccer. Yeah. We deserve to. But
Brazilians and Argentinians get along, except when it comes to soccer. You know, so
That is true.
So I wanted to quickly touch on when we met at PTC in Hawaii earlier this year. You mentioned that Odata's going after some of this AI requirements for the US, right? You want to go after some of these companies to look at Brazil as an option because you have plenty of power, you have plenty of space and to fulfill their needs. And I believe there's plenty of connectivity between Brazil and the US for them to be able to connect back to the US. So can you touch a little bit on that, on what efforts you guys are doing with some of these AI providers?
Sure. So yes, we do have a lot of capacity and land. And I think that the story Brazil is really generation, right? Power generation in Brazil is something that Brazil is rich in water and in wind and in solar. So let's call it new oil, right?
Yeah.
So we still have reserves of oil, but on this new economy, on this sustainable, you know, power generation story, Brazil is really probably one of the best places in the globe to really look. And I learned a lot more about, for example, our capacity for wind generation. And the yields that you get in the northeast of Brazil, you know, the coast from Bahia all the way to Fortaleza, Piauí, Maranhão, all the coast of Brazil in the northeast, are, according to some people, you know, there's no place on earth that you really get that type of yields, right? So I heard that, you know, yields in Japan, they're roughly around, you know, 35%. So the wind is blowing 35% of the time. So you get energy 35% of the time over 24 hours. And then, you know, Dallas, you have, you know, 40s, Netherlands 42. So you got these good, you know, things. But then in Brazil, you have, you know, every place you can find a 50% yield, right? Which is crazy. And then you put that on really cheap land, right? Which this is like desert, right? You know, the Cerrado of the Ceará is really. So you do that, and then you have a kilowatt hour price, because the price of a wind turbine is the same globally today, or almost the same, right? But if you put it on the coast of New York, right, or the land is expensive, but if you build it offshore, it's super expensive to build versus building, you know, inland in Bahia, where we are today in Xiquixique, which is like 5 hours by car from Salvador in the middle of nowhere, right? So the cost of that kilowatt hour ends. It's really interesting. So having said that, Brazil today, you know, has a capacity of generating, you know, a humongous amount of power from wind. You know, talking about roughly more than 50 gigawatts of capacity. That's untapped, completely untapped. And you lay on top solar, that multiplies, you know, I don't know if it doubles, but, you know, maybe it's another 50, you know, 40% of that. Well, having said that, there's no consumption for this in Brazil, right? And how do you export? When you find oil, you put that in a ship. and you send it anywhere in the globe, right? It's a commodity. Well, you know, wind, you have a turbine. How do you export it? You have to move it in the grid in order for consumption. So my idea was, hey, we've got all this capacity. Why? And globally, you know, really getting into a glut. The U.S. is going through a lot of changes right now. The grid there was not meant to be connected, and you know, wasn't designed for that. Now you had coal and oil power plants, right? You put them anywhere, but now you have to move the electrons, right? And the Brazilian grid was designed, you know, namely 50 years ago, it was designed as a single connected grid. You generate one electron in the Northeast, and we pick it up here in the Southeast. You know, and so today Odata is generating their own energy. So we own a park in Brazil, and we're partners with an operator. We don't operate wind farms, but we partner with them. So we have our own capacity. So all the capacity that we our data centers in Brazil require today comes from this park, and another we're adding a second park. And basically we generate our own, you know, sustainable energy, and we sell that to our customers. As you know, this is the model, you know, of hyperscale, and you know, basically it's a pass-through, so we sell it to them. So that's the story in Brazil. But how do we do more? How do we export this? Well, one of the ideas was, well, why don't we bring training here? You know, machine learning and large language models, they really require brute force. You know, it's processors and power those processors, right? Yep. And if we have all this energy sitting around, and it's sustainable and cheap at the same time, right? We're talking about, you know, getting to the 5 cents a dollar these days. Why not? And this is not something that Brazil would receive. When you look at cloud capacity, it's normally focused on the consumption of that country, right? And it's consumption-wise. AI is not. You're training models for the whole globe, right? So we could export data or process data using our local power. So this is what I'm trying to pitch. We've got super good reception from the government. The government is listening. They want to do more. They want to see how, you know, they help companies such as ours and our customers, you know, do more processing here. And right in the middle of that, right? And I think that discussion is really, you know, how fast can we build, what sorts of capacities and all that. Today, Odata has, you know, roughly more than 600 megawatts of land acquired and all that. But this is on top of it. This is sort of for our, you know, cloud type of growth. If we go into the AI machine learning type of demand, then we see that the market could really, really accelerate, right? And that would be basically for, like, you know, getting, not necessarily for usage here, it's really just exporting energy instead of putting in a boat, getting data centers here and just moving it through fiber elsewhere.
Yeah, no, that's great, because I think Brazil right now is nowhere near an energy issue or crunch like Mexico or other countries, right? So you have plenty of energy to go around. And one point that I think is very important that you pointed out was the wind turbines and the wind production, right, generation. Because what I'm seeing in certain countries, they depend too much on hydro, right? So hydro is their main renewable energy source. But we've seen countries like Colombia right now, Bogota, the mayor just put in rations for the city of Bogota because their reservoirs are so low. Montevideo also they had same issues. So, you know, companies need to look at diversifying their renewable resource beyond hydro, you know, wind, solar, hydro. It has to be a combination of all three, because you can't wind. I think wind, I don't think will suffice everything, but you will always have wind, but you may not always have water for hydro. So it's very important to diversify those resources. So I think that's great that you guys are doing that with the wind farms.
And to tell, I mean, the Brazilian grid today, they measured last year, they just announced it, so 93% of the energy was generated from renewable sources, be it hydro. But the interesting data there is that the growth that we had from solar and wind was incredible, right? So I could point like three years ago, maybe we're talking about 2 to 3%, we are 12% from wind and solar, right? So there's a lot of incentives. The part is the government, you know, and part is that we do have a great, you know, region for those sorts of generations. And, and part is that, you know, we had very wet seasons in the past. So all the gas powered plants are turned off right now because, you know, all the reservoirs are full. So that's something that's variable in Brazil. But as you add other sources, I think you're de-risking that as well.
Yeah, I read somewhere that Brazil is the largest importer of Chinese solar panels in the last 3 years. You've imported
by far.
So, definitely is something that's it's going to be picked up.
Which is the beauty of the turbine. So solar panels, 95% is imported from China. Turbines, 70% are built in Brazil. So also, so the government likes that as well. So because we're building them here, right? So that adds local jobs and things like that.
It's great. Well, I think we've taken up quite a bit of time. It's been a very interesting conversation. I really appreciate your time today, Ricardo, and I look forward to hearing more announcements about Odata and your growth and other markets. And you know, I'm in constant contact with your team. You know, about we talk about markets and strategies and so forth. So it's been great, and I wish you continued luck. And I do want to mention that we work very closely with Align as well, and I know that. I've been told that Align is obviously very happy with the purchase of Odata, and that there's a great fit between the two companies, which I agree with. And so congratulations on that. And I see a lot of, you know, great potential and growth for you guys in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for the kind words. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure being here, Steve.